Hello and welcome to an episode of Everything is Canon, the CineLinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at SteveDunk5 or at Everything Canon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Nafisa Azad all about her new book, The Wild Ones, a thrilling feminist fantasy about a group of teenage girls endowed with special powers who must band together to save the life of the boy whose magic saved them all. The Wild Ones is many things. It's definitely an alarming and disarming alternating stream of consciousness, plot-based fantasy full of magic and wonder, but it's also a very personal story to Nafisa, who in her own words has been there, tasted the helplessness, the darkness, the frustration, and the anger. Nafisa has revealed a pathway of healing, not only for her large cast of Wild Ones, but us as well. We talk about how Peter Pan inspired parts of the story, her experience recording for the audiobook, pirating books, The Wild Ones, of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book yet and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices. And this should be done all year long. And as a reminder that August is Black Business Month, so get out there and support Black-owned businesses. I'm partial to independent bookstores myself. So safely seek out any Black-owned independent bookstores, if you can, close to you or online, and give them some of your money. Nafisa Azad is a self-identified island girl, having been born in Latoka, Fiji. I hope she'll correct me. I'm sure I said that wrong. She has hurricanes in her blood and dreams of a time she can exist solely on mangoes and pineapple, two very good things, in my opinion. Growing up, opportunities to access reading materials were limited. Her hometown only contained one library, and readers could only borrow two books at a time. So Nafisa and her friends often made up stories for entertainment. Her debut YA fantasy, The Candle and the Flame, which came out last year, received a William C. Morris Award nomination, which is a very big deal, by the way. But she's here today to talk about her new book, The Wild Ones, which is described as a thrilling feminist fantasy about a group of teenage girls endowed with special powers who must band together to save the life of the boy whose magic saved them all. She currently resides in British Columbia, Canada, and I want to bring that up, where she reads too many books, watches too many K-dramas, and writes stories about girls taking over the world. Please welcome to the show Nafisa Azad. Hi, Nafisa.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for coming on the show. It took us a bit to get it going, but we figured it out. I am taking the blame. First thing I want to start off with, because you are still in a heat wave out there, so I hope that you're keeping cool, and I hope your family and friends are all staying cool as well.
No, the heat wave has gone, thank goodness.
Okay, I'm not up to date then. Okay, so it's...
It was bad.
Yeah. Is everyone... But everyone was safe that you know anyways?
Yes.
During it? Okay.
Except for my plants, because I have started... and you wouldn't believe how badly the sun treated the plants. They just burned. It was like the leaves were crunchy like in autumn.
It's such a weird relationship because they need the sun, but then it also kills them, too much of it.
Mind though how bad the climate change is and how bad things can get if people don't start taking it seriously.
Well, that's the thing, right? And I know, like, we don't want to turn this into a climate change show, but for the deniers out there, it's an issue because I get it in a way. It's not something you can necessarily see all the time. So for people that don't have like the ability to sort of take a step back and look at the big picture stuff, it's hard for them to grasp like what's going to happen to the earth in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, 100 years. But imagine the heat wave on the West Coast all the time. Right? Like, that's what we're talking about. No, like lack of water has started and is starting wars all around the world as we speak. So just imagine that. Imagine all the water just like gone, and we brag about how much. I always make this joke. It's not a joke, but I joke about it. Like, we have so much water in this country. We have water parks. Like, we have wave pools. We waste water in an absurd way. And you think about what people are having to do just for a bucket of water around the world right now. And So imagine that all the time. And I just, you know, to the climate people out there who don't believe in it necessarily, like, this is, you know, that's just a taste of it, right? Isn't it?
Yes, it just shows the disparity between people. And then places like Nestle, who want to sell water, who think that water should be sold everywhere.
Right.
You have to be so smart about what, about the, about who you support with your money.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah.
I feel like this heat wave brought home to me the fact that, you know, it is my responsibility too. I can't just, you know, depend on the government. Every little thing counts.
100% agree. Well said. Definitely. Yeah. Like, it's during times like that when especially these bad actors really float to the surface, don't they? And they should be easy to identify, right? Because they're the ones that are making the most money during the worst times in the history of the planet. You can look back on history, right?
Yeah.
So, well, I'm glad that you, your family and friends, nobody, I have a brother. So you are in Vancouver. I was born on the island. And my middle brother, Vancouver City, and my oldest brother, White Rock, he's actually in Vernon right now. So he didn't have to evacuate, but it got real close. Yes. And now we're both, me and my other brother, we're in Ontario now. But yeah, so we're West Coast people. So I'm happy that, you know, you and all your friends out there in the West Coast are okay after the heat wave. So we have that in common anyways. And we're also, we're both Pisces.
Yeah.
So there you go. I'm March 8th. You don't have to tell me. Okay, perfect. So there you go. We have a couple things in common. So you moved to, when you came to Canada, you came as a teenager, correct?
Yep.
Was it straight to Vancouver or was there somewhere else in between?
No, we came straight to Vancouver. Yeah.
Okay. So you've been there ever since. Yes. You like it there? No intention of leaving, I assume, at this point, or?
No, I mean, like, moving is such a pain, especially now. Yep. That I have 1,000+ books.
Yep.
I wouldn't believe, like, when I came from Fiji to Canada, one suitcase was books only.
Yeah. Did I say the town in Fiji correct?
Yes, Lautoka. Yeah.
Lautoka. Okay, perfect. By the way, Lautoka makes an appearance in The Wild Ones. Anybody who's listening?
City I've been to in the book.
Okay, perfect. And mangoes also make an appearance in the book plenty of times. One of the things too in your bio, which about the growing up, you know, access to reading materials and stuff and only having one library. And I don't know how much you're on Twitter these days, but I think it was last week, there was an issue about, I don't know who started it, but they were talking about piracy, downloading books and stuff like that. And authors seem to be split on it. You know, some authors are like, nope, get my book any way you can. I understand everyone's in different financial situations. There are people around the world who don't even have access to a library. So, but they have the internet, which is weird, right? So get it however you can. So you are a working author. What's your take on that?
Before, I used to be of the opinion that, you know, as long as if you can get your hands on it, if you're not in North America and it's not readily available, because I understand what it means to be poor, right? I've been poor.
Yeah.
So, and I know what it means to just to yearn to read something and you don't have access to it. But now that I've seen that, the fact that if you don't sell books, like if your books don't sell, they don't buy any other books from you. That is a reality that a lot of us are battling with. And this reality becomes fact when your books are pirated. And the sad thing is, there are people who do have access to libraries. They will still, for convenience sake, download your books.
Yeah, no, that's, I think, I doubt you'd find anyone that agrees with that position, right? Like, people doing that.
But if you, for me, if you are in a country and you have no other option, if you can't find my book in your country, or if you don't have enough money where you are, it's okay.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing, isn't it? And you know, there are people who, I have no doubt there are people that do it. They're doing it right now, like downloading the books, and don't feel great about it. but just don't have any other choice maybe. Now, this was, I think this was a bigger problem back when the internet first came around, right? Like, remember, you know, like the Napster days and stuff like that. And I won't ask your, age, but just nod if you agree. I remember at the time back when that happened, I was reading this article and they said, you know, besides music that was being downloaded, right, at a tremendous rate at the time, the second biggest industry hit was actually the needlework, like the patch quilt industry. So, and what had happened was older women got internet savvy, like, and I'm talking people who stitch and sew and stuff, and learned to download the patterns and print them, or not download, but just print them instead of having to buy the books. And so for a period of time, and I don't know how long it lasted, but for a period of time, the second biggest industry hit from downloading was actually the needlepoint industry. And it was essentially a bunch of old ladies just downloading and printing patterns instead of buying the books. So,
you know, I think it was to the point that there are barely any pattern books available now. They're all downloadable.
And that's why, right? And that's probably the start of it. A bunch of old ladies got quick to the scheme and said, hey, you know, I don't have to do that. But so it's only natural that would extend to any type of print material, wouldn't it? So I think it's died down a bit from what I understand because of things like, I think the like ebooks, audiobooks have really helped in that situation because you can get those fairly cheap now. In some cases, if the book's been out a year, I mean, you can get like a dollar, right? I mean, you can even download free, legally free audiobooks now. So that helps, I think, for sure. So, but yeah, it's an unfortunate situation. And I'm pro-author, so I'm always going to, I agree with you in that sentiment. Like, you know, if everyone downloaded books, there'd be no books.
Yeah.
We would run out of books because authors wouldn't, they would stop writing books. So,
I mean, honestly, think about it. We don't get paid a lot for books we've worked on.
No, you don't.
Years. And if on top of the people downloaded books, we need to eat too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. And it's, listen, this is, you're, especially for, you know, marginalized authors, it's already, it's unfair, the business already. So, if you're going to download books, download from a white white authors only. Oh gosh. But yeah, no, it's true. Like, yeah, it's art, but this is your labor and you spend so much time and effort writing these books and you should be paid for your work. There's no doubt about it. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Oh, you were mentioning audiobooks just a bit ago. And I want to say that I recorded a bit of the audiobook and I'm so excited for it. For the audiobook of The Wild Ones.
Like you did a voice in it?
Yes. The parts where the Book of Memories parts were.
Yeah, yeah. Which ones? All of them? You did all the Book of Memories?
Yes, I did.
Wow. Good. That's very cool. I don't, yeah, you know, that's cool. And that's going to make me actually listen to it because I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks because
neither.
I'm just like, I'm a print nerd. I like a book. I like reading it. I also have sort of like, I'm such a loser because I'll think like, I have a specific idea in my head of how that person should sound. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's the same thing when they cast someone for a movie or TV show. It's like, if I read the book first and I think that's how this person looks and they cast somebody that's slightly off, I'm like, I start whining about it. You know what I mean? So
there are going with me, including me, there are three narrators for the book, which
okay.
I'm excited about. So there's one Bailey's voice and one lady who does The Wild Ones, she can do different voices.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
And then there's me. So it's going to be super fun.
That is very... And you've done that already or you're going to?
I've done it.
How was that experience?
It was great. I felt like I pretended to be a pop star in the recording booth. And there was a director too. And she told me, you know, infuse the heartbreak into your words. And I'm like, I don't know, but I will try.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm going to do it. Yeah. Okay. Let's spend a minute talking about that then. So you did it. You had to go to like a professional studio or you did it from where?
I had to go to Burnaby, some really like... warehouse portion of Burnaby by Deer Lake Park. I don't know if you know that.
Like it was kind of sketchy or?
No, just that it's very deserted almost. So there's lots of forests and parks over there.
Usually,
I know there. But yeah, there was a cool setup with small recording booths. I've never been there. And they usually do like animes and stuff, like dubbing for animes.
I see.
Super nice. They had fancy water.
Ooh, what do you mean? Like Perrier or what?
Mineral water, yeah.
Fancy mineral water.
Yeah.
And great. So the director was the director.
She was directing remotely.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah, she wouldn't have flown in or wouldn't even have been able to. But so she was just like on a laptop or something, or
through Zoom.
Zoom, yeah, okay. And how long did that take?
It took about 40 minutes. Sometimes she would have me do the whole thing once or twice, but it just went by really fast.
Because that seems very fast to me, yeah.
Yeah, because I guess I knew the characters really well. So
right, right.
Emotions to come from. So.
Right, but I mean, there's a lot of Book of Memories. I mean, there's like 11, right? Yeah. It's 40 minutes. See, you're a pro. That's what that tells me, is you're a pro. You should be an actor, yeah.
Yeah, I've been told to read my own book because after the times I did some reading, people are like, oh, I love listening to you read. Could you do your own book? I was like, let me try.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a situation where I'm trying not to use the term own voices, but sorry, for lack of a better word, is your own voice. And I mean, it's, you know, who knows that voice and these characters better than you? And if you're willing to do it, yeah, it makes sense that it would be you. I mean,
yeah. And they were short enough that I didn't get tired. I mean, I couldn't imagine reading the entire book.
Oh, I know some of these long books, right? And these, I have listened to a couple of audio dramas lately, and they've done a couple for actually one for Star Wars last year. Mm-hmm. And the voice actress, Sarah Kuhn wrote it, but Emily Wu Zeller did the voice. Mm-hmm. And it was a full cast with like sound effects and everything. So that was really cool. It reminded me of like an old time radio thing, you know, in a way, right? So that I was able to do. And but yeah, audiobooks I tend to struggle with, but I'm going to listen to this one for sure. And I'm going to, just because you're in it now, I'm going to listen to it for sure. So. I'm very excited. That's cool. Very cool. Good for you. A lot of people don't have the balls, the courage to do that. So was that like a nerd? Were you really nervous? Were you comfortable?
I actually was an orator when I was a young.
Okay.
So I have the experience of going up on stage when I was in grade 3.
I see.
My entire 4-page speech. So after that, I am fine. Done that.
That's very cool. Good for you. That's something that's going to make me listen to it. So yeah, I'm good. I want to start off with something. So just doing some research, I want to start with a great answer that you gave to a not so great question a few years ago. So your answer was the question was about, you know, like, I think, or the question was something like, how do you write diversely or something? And so you said, you don't choose to write diversely, you choose to tell a story. I write about the world and its people, albeit in fantastical landscapes. The world is not a single color or a single sexual orientation. People don't call their god by the same name. I write as the world is. And I thought that was a fucking really great answer to not a great question. I'm apologies to that person, but it's almost like that was almost like a slapback in a way, wasn't it, your answer? Because you're just like, yeah, there's, you don't, it's almost like they're accusing you of manufacturing it in a way that felt insincere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the same people who would call diversity a trend.
Yeah.
So it gets tiring. Like, you have to keep on explaining yourself, your true and your lived experiences to people who seem to think the world is monochrome.
Yeah. It just, and like I said, it seemed like it's almost accusatory in a way, isn't it, that question? Like, yeah, like you manufactured diversity or yeah, I don't know. It was a really bad question. And I thought you answered it beautifully. And that sort of ties in with the whole, how are you doing these days with like the marketing side of being a published author? Because I read that you initially sort of struggled with it.
I still do.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, how you're doing, especially on the social media aspects of it, where especially lately, and I've talked to many authors about this, where like the audience just seems to feel fucking entitled to every piece of you, don't they? And, you know, I'm wondering, and I don't think you, and I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you engage that much on social media, but So two questions, I guess. Number one, are you feeling any more comfortable about the marketing side of publishing? And two, have you experienced anything like that so on social media where people are just asking stuff and you're like, you know, hold on there, bud.
It's strange. There's this Elena Ferrante. Have you heard of her? She's this really famous Italian writer.
Okay, no, I haven't.
Who insisted on being anonymous, and her anonymity annoyed some men. So because she's super successful, so he just went and found out who she could be, and he published it without, you know, thinking that there's a reason this woman doesn't want her name to be out there. Anyway, she has this really amazing collection of her interviews and written and spoken interviews. And in it, she says that I am not what's on sale. It is my book. So mm-hmm. I should be on the shelf along with my book. And I always tell my friends that I feel the same way. But sadly, as a YA writer, as a North American writer, you don't have, like, you have to sort of make yourself as available or as accessible as your book is. And a lot of that comes from social media. I am an inherently awkward person. I don't know how to speak to people. That's why I'm a writer, I guess. Yeah. So I do, like, now that the release date is coming, I do make it a point to go on Twitter a lot more than I used to. But I tend to be more frequent around Instagram because it's easier to talk in pictures.
Sure.
And it's less confrontational on Instagram compared to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And if, sometimes Twitter seems like a popularity pageant where you have to showcase how popular you are by the number of people who respond to your tweets or whatnot. And I am not very good at that.
Twitter's also a shithole too, a lot of times, right? Like, it's, I was talking to I don't remember which author I was talking to the other, and we both agreed that, like, Twitter is both the greatest thing ever and the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound super weird, but last year, what happened was that one of my a Brazilian author, a friend, she talked about how she couldn't understand people who didn't shower every day. And for me, who also comes from a tropical country where showers, you have to shower every day if you want to be in polite company, if you want to be in company with other people, I couldn't get it either. So I said, I agree. And all of a sudden, I have people saying that I'm never going to read her book because she said this. And I for the longest time, I was like, what?
This is, yeah, and it's, you know, I've talked to authors who have just backed away completely from it because of situations like that, or even worse, or they've faced instances of racism or bigotry or whatever. And they said, you know what, it's just not worth it. And so I guess I'm going to ask you, and I've asked them this too, have you ever been asked or felt pressure from your publisher to sell more of yourself online in social spaces?
The only thing, I'm with a different publisher right now. My debut was with Scholastic.
Okay.
I had semi hiatus on my Twitter handle, and they were like, could you remove that so the readers know that you're present? And that's the only time.
Okay.
Other than that, they haven't particularly asked me pointedly, but they have sent me stuff and said, could you retweet this or that? Or what they do now is they ask you for video recordings.
Right.
For Instagram and stuff.
Sure. I mean, there's obvious things, right? Like the cover reveal or the title reveal or something like that, right? Of course, or on sale dates and stuff like that. But, you know, I know I've talked to some authors and they've told me, like, they felt the pressure from publishers to be more active on social media to try and move more units. And read some great articles from people like Case and Callender who have said, like, you know what, I'm not going to put my foot in the flame to sell 200 more books. Now, that's a great position to be in, right? Obviously, if you're not worried about 200 books, right? But if that's all the books you're selling, then it's a different situation, isn't it? And I'm not saying one's right or wrong, or one's fair and one's unfair, but it's a weird thing now, right? Because of social media, it's changed the way we interact. It's changed the way we market, isn't it?
Exactly. And it used to be that becoming an author depended on how you wrote. Now it's how many people are following you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, it just...
It's weird. Yeah, it's totally strange. And I always feel for authors, because especially in a situation where you're putting maybe a bit of yourself in the story or into a character. And then, like I said, I've seen the adverse reaction to that, where the audience feels like they know you or they're entitled to a piece of you because of that. And it's wrong. I mean, like, I've become friends with some authors because of Twitter, but I wouldn't go knock on their fucking door. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird. I don't know. It's weird. Maybe I'm just old. Let's get to the book here in a second. But one thing I wanted to do, I was going to make a stupid joke and I was going to call you Precious Freedom.
Oh my God.
I know. I'm glad I didn't. But that is a really funny story though. And not so much, your name isn't funny. It's actually quite beautiful to be. And I know I think you said it's cheesy or something that, but it's actually, I mean, it's, I think it's beautiful. And, but Nafisa Azad is a beautiful name as well. But it just so happens that in Arabic, it means precious freedom. But the funny part of that story though, isn't what your name means. It's that it's the uncle part of the story.
I asked my parents, I'm your only daughter and you couldn't name me. You have to get a name from this person we don't even talk to anymore. I always envied people. And when I read Anne of Green Gables and saw that she was giving herself names, I thought I could too. But apparently you can't do that.
Sure you can. Who says you can't do that? And then the crazy part of the story is that you don't even have a relationship with his uncle, do you, anymore?
No, I mean, he lives in Australia, so.
Isn't that weird? That's such a funny story, yeah. All right. I mean, it is what it is now. I guess it's too late, I suppose. I mean, well, you can always change your name legally. So I'm going to just claim ignorance here. Within the Muslim community, because I can change my name, right? It's a totally normal, and you can do it legally. It's a thing you're allowed to do. Is that frowned upon in Islam?
No, I don't think so.
No, okay.
I've never come across. I mean, if you took away your dad's name, yeah, then I can see people being like, "What?"
Right.
I can see my dad being all pissed off, but
sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it happens all the time, but I actually know people who have changed their name. So I know it's a thing, and it's legally you're allowed to do it. But I didn't know if it was frowned upon in the Muslim community or not. But
it's not.
All right. So The Wild Ones, before we actually get to the book, this is going to be non-spoiler, so we don't have to worry about that. But that you wrote something really nice about this book, not nice, but I thought important. And it made me think that this book is very personal to you. So the line is, I've been there, talking about The Wild Ones and sort of what it's about. I've been there. I've tasted the helplessness, the darkness, the frustration, and the anger, the guilt, the self-blame, the hurt. The Wild Ones is my rallying cry for every girl out there. It wasn't your fault. You are not unworthy. You are precious. The world is yours too. I mean, that's just fucking beautiful. There's no two ways about it. So this book was personal to you though, wasn't it?
It is. It was super personal. And the truth is, the Candle in the Flame is about almost twice as long as this one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 114,000 words. And this one is only about 68,000, but this one took me about twice as long to write because it was so difficult to write.
Right.
And here's something I haven't told many people, but all the Book of Memories come from my own diary. So that's how personal it is.
That's very personal, and that if you want me to edit that out, I will. But if you want me to leave this in the show, I'll leave it in. It's up to you, but. That sort of knocks the wind out of me a little bit, because for those of you that haven't read the book, you don't mince words in the book. Like, these girls experience some pretty fucking awful things. Mm-hmm. And it's not fantastical. I mean, the book is fantastical, but these situations that you put these girls in, especially in the Book of Memories, the things that these girls experience are things that are happening to someone right now.
Yes.
Somewhere in the world, times a million, right? And it's the reality, and it's, we all wish it wasn't, but it is the reality, and probably will be forever. I don't know who, probably, right? So fact that you're telling me that you've experienced some of these things is just like, yeah, this makes it, it adds a bit of, it adds a lot more weight to the book for sure. And it also tells me that, doesn't tell me, but it makes me sort of want to ask you, was it also, it explains why it took you longer to write for sure, but it also, was it cathartic? Was it, are these things you've sort of come to terms with already, or was writing this book part of a healing process in some way?
You have probably heard other marginalized authors speak about how, as marginalized authors, we are asked to make ourselves much more vulnerable on the page.
Right, right. Yeah.
And, you know, if I was going to, I wouldn't be able to write this book again.
Right.
Because I would choose not to do that to myself.
Understood. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was cathartic, but at the same time, I was intentionally excavating experiences of mine that I did not necessarily need to. And by doing so, I probably made them fresher than they should have been.
I see. Okay. That's kind of what I was asking. Yeah. Like, was this, like I said, part of a healing process, or just sort of a way to maybe finally excommunicate, right, a lot of these memories that you've been holding on to for so long, right? And well, you'll hold on to them forever, I'm sure. But was this like a giant breath of fresh air, like a releasing of a giant breath that you felt like you've been holding maybe for a very long time?
Yes, it was. As I said, I was determined not to let the experiences define me, and I felt that I could recreate that experience and make it into something beautiful, something that would help other women who are going through the same thing, letting them know that they're not alone. But I realized that there was, I mean, I was opening myself up to criticism, especially where reviews are concerned, because I did a bad thing and read a review, and it made me so angry because the reviewer, who was a man, who said that the book is about girls whining about the bad things men have done to them, and that sentence reduced everything in the book to something trivial, and it made me so angry. But I am still glad I wrote it, because I feel like it's important. There are certain things I have said in the book that I don't think any other YA novel has done or spoken about.
Only a man could write that line. Right? Whining about the things that happened to women. Only a fucking man could write that line. And I apologize on behalf of all men for that bullshit. Yeah, that person, if it was a real person, number one.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But, you know, let's say it was, and I would, if I was in the presence of this man, I would kick them in the the private parts and slap them across the face and tell them to fucking get a clue. But anyways, you don't read reviews. I think you know that, but
Now I do. Yeah.
Now I do. Yeah. The Wild Ones. Do you want to read the summary? Do you want me to read the summary, or do you have like an elevator sort of version thing that you want to practice? Because, you know, you're going to be doing more of these, and you know, that's the first question you're going to get asked, right? Like, what's the book about? So,
I'm fine
reading it. It's up. However you want to do it. This is, like I said, when you're on the show, this is your show, so you get to do whatever you want.
Okay, please go ahead and read it.
Okay. It is a pretty good, I'm actually a bit of a summary nerd. And so like I appreciate a good summary, because not all summaries are created equal, by the way. Oh, and also too, before we actually get too far ahead, I wanted to say how much I loved your website. It's beautiful. And that's another thing that aren't all created equal are authors' websites. And you've got a really nice one. So thefizazad.com for anyone out there listening. All right. The Wild Ones. Meet the Wild Ones, girls who have been hurt, abandoned, and betrayed all their lives. It all began with Pahili, who was once betrayed by her mother and sold to a man in exchange for a favor. When Pahili escapes, she runs headlong into a boy with stars in his eyes. This boy, as battered as she is, tosses Pahili a box of stars before disappearing. With the stars, Pahili gains access to the Between, a place of pure magic and mystery. Now, Pahili collects girls like herself, and these Wild Ones use their magic to travel the world, helping the hopeless and saving others from the fates they suffered. Then Bahili and the Wild Ones learn that the boy who gave them the stars, Tirana, is that right? Did I say that right? Tirana?
Yeah.
Okay, is in danger. He's on the run from powerful forces with the world of magic. But if Tirana is no longer safe and free, neither are the Wild Ones. And that is a fate the Wild Ones refuse to accept ever again. Pretty good summary. I actually like it. It doesn't give away. Some summaries give away way too much. And that doesn't really give away anything at all. But I think there's some real, I mean, there's some real obvious, we've talked a bit about it already, actually, and there's some real obvious things, surface level things that I think people can take away from this book. But if there's one single thing you want people to take from this book, what is it?
That you're worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is one, like, you matter, you deserve the best.
Right.
That's the one thing that I want people to.
That's a big part of it, isn't it? And it's almost, and also too, like reading this book and you're just like, seriously, what's with men and power? Like what they can't, they have to have it all, right? And any, you know, there's a few exceptions, but generally like that's what a lot of the story is about. I mean, it's about control and power, isn't it? And as soon as that starts to slip or the balance starts to tip in the direction opposite of men, they get pissed off about it, don't they? So this is a really interesting, this whole idea of the between is really, really cool and really interesting. Talk about like in your mind, how the between started, because it is a place of sort of pure, it's a place of pure magic and people known as the middle worlders, you know, they can take the form of humans and the wild ones use the between to sort of travel. They can travel around the world at an instant through doorways they can create. So talk about sort of just like that idea of the between and sort of maybe like the early versions of it and how you developed into, you know, the final version that we get in the book.
Okay.
So without spoilers, of course.
So let me tell you how I came up with the idea.
Okay.
This idea. So I've always been reading Peter Pan and Lost Boys. And it always irritated me that there were a brotherhood, but there was no sisterhood.
Right.
And so my attempt, The Wild Ones was my attempt to rewrite Peter Pan. So that's why Bahili starts with a P and Tirana is supposed to be Tinkerbell. I don't like Wendy, so she's not present. The Wild Ones were the Lost Boys. And okay. Neverland is, the world is a Neverland.
Okay.
The between came as a way for them to travel this Neverland.
I see. Okay, that's really cool. There's a really good book out this year called Darling by Calum Ankrum, and it's like a retelling of Peter Pan, but in a modern day setting. And it does not shy away from like the weird shit that was going on in the original J.M. Barrie novel. Like, so I was going to say, before you rule out Wendy altogether, read that book first. You'll like Wendy after you read that book because it's a modern day tale. And I think it puts Peter Pan in the right context and puts him in the right place that he should be in, which is not the Peter Pan that they've tried to sell us, right, for so many years. I recommend that book. Okay, that's really cool that you were inspired by Peter Pan. You have a big cast in this book.
Yes.
And you mentioned in the book at one point, we start with 11, but you mentioned there was way more right at some point, but you don't really talk about sort of them so much. Was that something that was whittled down during the editing process? Did you talk about sort of that a little bit more, or was that just from day one, you wanted to be like, you know what, that's the past. I want to focus on this current group. That's their story.
So there were originally a lot more. And
yeah.
More Book of Memories portions too, and my editor was like, no. She was like, I got lost in trying to figure out who's who.
Right.
She was right. And so The Wild Ones is never meant to be a forever thing. Girls come in and they go because they are only 20 stars. And so they only stay until the time they're ready to move on. That's the whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
So when we meet the girls, the 11, the 10 girls, they are there at the present, but it's also understood that they will move on.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with them. They weren't in the beginning. They were all very, they didn't have as much individual characteristics because I was going for the voice very strongly and I didn't think that they should.
Right.
But but my editor said that it would enhance the experience of reading and the story if we do focus just a little bit on each character and try to draw their personalities out. Mm-hmm. So I did, and I think it works because you see their individualities, but you see them as a collective too. Mm-hmm. Because in my culture, we are more collective rather than individuals.
Right.
Because when I came to Canada, then I realized that I could have my own favorite color and my own favorite food. It's strange because when I was in Fiji, it was all like, what do you like? We would all answer in one group. We like blue or we like mangoes, you know? And then we moved from we to I. And then so I tried to go back to the we. And I feel like I succeeded on showing that you can be an individual but still part of a group, a collective. So yeah, I did start with many more, but then I did whittle them down to make it more accessible and easier to read.
Yeah, which I think you did, because I mean, yeah, you couldn't start with 20. There's the book's not long. There's you would need 3 books, but it's a really, I love that idea, the we idea in this book, because there is a ton of it. It's like, there's so many instances in the book where when one person just wants to go, they just instinctively go as a group, or maybe not all 11, right? But 3 or 4 of them, or they're never alone.
Yes.
They always are together. And part of that is instinctual. Part of that is survival in a way too, right? Because of what some of them have gone through, and they just feel better, and it is safer and when you travel together. And one of the cool things too that you put in was one of their, like, there's some, you know, there's a lot of magic in this book, and one of their sort of like quote unquote powers is they have, like, they're able to scream, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. And this sort of like sonic boom type of situation, it renders people helpless. And mm-hmm. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, using their voice, you know, reclaiming their voice, using it as a power, was certainly an easy thing to spot. But were you careful with, like, because you don't want to make them gods either, right?
No.
Yeah. So it's like they need to be sort of grounded in a way, but powerful enough where they're able to do the things they do, right?
I am very careful because I'm Muslim.
Yeah.
And
there can only be one, right? Yeah.
And so I did explicitly say that it's a middle wall for a reason, because there's a divine wall which they cannot move the curtain to see, and then the human wall. Right. That's why it's called the middle wall. It's between the divine and the human.
Mm-hmm.
So they're completely not gods, and they know they don't have as much power, but they do know how to use the power they have very smartly.
Right.
Very smartly. So.
So there's conflict, obviously, in this book, and have conflict. You need to have balance, and balance is two sides, and usually we're talking good guys and bad guys. The bad guys are gonna, I think, surprise some people, because it's not as simple as. It's not Darth Vader, right? Like, it's, you know, it's complicated, and it ends up being, you do a little bit of a switcheroo sort of at the end about who's actually the bad people. But what I liked about it was you never lost focus of the group, the Wild Ones, no matter how insane the conflict gets and how crazy, how high the stakes get, you always ground the team back. There's a ton of times in the book where they always sort of come back and gather in and occupy like a single space, the group of them. And it's almost like they make a point of meeting at the end of the day in a way. Was that because in this world is a really fantastical, magical world, and you literally have doorways opening possibilities to so many different things, and that could spin out of control narratively, right? This is more of a process question, like a mechanical as a storyteller. Mm-hmm. Talk about sort of the editing process there, as far as like, you know, I need to like make sure I keep control of this narrative, because we read a lot of books every year, right? Fantasy books where things get just fucking bonkers. You know, I really feel like you kept this thing grounded.
I thought about it this way. These girls have homes in many of the cities in the world.
Right.
the true homes are in each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if they, I actually thought about making them go to different places by themselves, but that wouldn't have worked because if they didn't have anchors in time, or because they're immortal, as long as they're wearing that star, they're immortal.
Right.
If they didn't have anchors, they would be adrift. And this, the what I really chose to focus on was the trauma that they all suffered. It doesn't just disappear just because you become supernatural, right? It is something you have to deal with. And I think they do address it. Why do we stay with each other? It's not just misery loves company. It's just that we have homes in each other. It's sort of like, you know, when you come together, you share the pain, and knowing that they're home to each other and they comfort each other. So that's why they stick together. And plus, you know, it's easier to focus on the story when all of your characters are in the same place.
That's true. That is also a very practical way to tell a story.
I'm already myself for having them go to different places.
Right. Yeah. Don't make it too hard on yourself. That's true. But it also just thematically works just so well too, yeah. Right? Like you couldn't imagine any one of them, you know, like if, you know, Zuko decided one day to be like, you know what, I'm just going to go off on my own. They'd be like, whoa. It's just not something that would be totally cool. But there's a line actually from there's a line from another book actually I wanted to read back to you because I think it really is important in this book. So the line is, there's no way to keep my dignity except to act like he is not capable of taking mine away no matter what he does. Mm-hmm. And in the end, isn't all that dignity is the boundaries and values you decide for yourself. So that's in another book, but I think that applies to this one big time, doesn't it?
I think the best revenge, somebody else said this, but the best revenge is to lead a good life.
Right, yep.
Despite everything that has happened to you, you don't let it win, let whatever your trauma win. So you take the trauma, like that Japanese way of putting things back together.
Mm-hmm.
So you put yourself back together and you become a better person after being broken than you were before, and that's the best revenge you can have.
It is, and it got me thinking too of you. You wrote a really great article in Publishers Weekly about wearing the hijab.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes to that, doesn't it? Because I encourage people to seek that article out and read it. You talk about the reasons why you decided to start wearing a hijab and things like this to prove it's, in a lot of ways, it's. I'm not going to say you did it as a protest. You're doing it because you have a strong faith and you want to be closer to God for sure. But you also did it just to let people know, like, what you think this represents isn't necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're taking that narrative back, aren't you? Back from us, from Western chauvinistic ideas, from men. You're taking that narrative and making it your own. And that's kind of what we're talking about too with this dignity thing, aren't we?
Yes, definitely. I feel like that is the one thing I pursue in the book as well.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, this is a no bullshit story. It's filled with a lot of pain, uncomfortable situations. And if you're a guy, my advice to you is just suck it up. Try and fucking learn something. And I really love the ending of this book. You know, we're not going to talk about the details, but you don't make any there's no promises of victory. There's no like foolhardy attempts at pretending like, you know, the ills of society are now cleansed because you've read this book or because you even wrote this book, right? Yeah. There's no righting all the wrongs that happened to these girls. You can't, because that's retroactive, right? You can only choose to move forward once the act has occurred, right? So I read it more of like there's even a line, I wrote it down. It's like you literally say, we cannot give you a neat and tidy ending with a bow on top. Like you literally say it. It's about daring, right? About the will to act, to find your courage to do something. So this book to me reads more of like a call to action.
It is. I think it's fueled by anger.
Yeah.
And it's the book is very angry. I think I have read a lot of feminist novels, and a lot of them are very subtle because, you know, you try to show and not tell. And I was like, you know what? Screw that. I am done with showing. I'm going to just say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but there's this one part where it says there are urinals in France shaped like female.
Right.
If you don't think there's anything wrong with it, you should stop reading this book because this book is angry.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly. And I couldn't agree more. It's kind of like what I was just saying, right? Like, just, you know, get over yourself. And again, especially men, like, just get over it and take this as a learning opportunity. And in a lot of ways, you know, I would say to somebody like Nafisa is like helping you. Take the help. receive the help. Okay. The Wild Ones comes out August 3rd. It's a launch day event. You got a launch day event going on?
There's going to be a virtual launch and it is going to be fun. There's going to I'm going to be speaking with Karuna Riazi, XCO, and Kat Cho. So there's going to be a sisterhood over there.
That's a great lineup.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
So yep.
If you happen to have time, I believe it is going to be at 5 or 4 Pacific time and 7 Eastern.
7 Eastern on August 3rd, on the release day?
Yeah.
Okay.
There will be more information about it next week.
Okay. And I'm sure you've got other things going on too all week, I would imagine.
I am on deadline.
Oh, right. They always do it, don't they? They plan it that way. They make deadlines on the day of your launches just so you can be extra tired. NafisaAzad.com. I'm sure if there's anything going on, that's a good place to check it out. Nafisa, thank you so much for coming on. As you can tell, I'm sort of not prone to bullshit. I really enjoyed The Wild Ones. And, oh, we didn't even talk about this beautiful cover. Oh, God. You must have been so happy when you saw this cover.
It's done by actually a woman of color, Alex Cabal.
Alex Cabal, okay.
She's C-A-B-A-L, and she has this really amazing store with prints and stuff. So if you want prints, art, more of this kind, check her out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, the wrap is insane. Like, it's beautiful. Like, people like need to understand, like, it wraps all the way around the backside and you get a look at all the Wild Ones. And
like, I'm holding the hardcover in my hands and it's this velvety touch to it.
Oh, okay. I only have a digital, so I'm going to make sure I get a hardcover too, because it is gorgeous and I can't wait to see it on my shelf, because it looks amazing. And I love the, and I think I read somewhere actually that you, I wrote it down. I don't have it. I'll have to find it, but I think somebody asked you online who each person is on the covers, and you answered them. So I have that written down. So that's really cool too. But yeah, this cover is incredible. I love it. So
I got really lucky with covers, to be honest.
Yeah. Even looking at your older ones too, like Candle in the Flame is a beautiful cover, but this one is top notch for sure. We've had some great covers this year, but this one stands out, I think. And it really, like, it's going to look great on shelves. There's no doubt about it.
Definitely.
Nafisa, thank you so much. Please enjoy your weekend. And, you know, you'll know when this episode airs, you'll be tagged and all that stuff. So have a wonderful launch. Try and get some sleep the night before. If you can.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I know it's a tough proposition, but try if you can. And yes, definitely peace be upon you and enjoy your weekend.
There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Nafisa for taking the time to speak with me today. I had such a great time talking with her. The Wild Ones is out now, so head on over to NafisaAzad.com to order a copy today. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.